Welcome back to the Profit Your Knowledge podcast. Today's guest is Melissa Esmeralda. Melissa is a copywriter, one of my favorite topics. She's a marketing strategist and a semi-retired rugby player. So watch out, guys. I think rugby's so awesome. But she helps coaches, course creators, and online service providers increase their conversions with ethical, science-backed copy that connects with their audience. So, so important. She specializes in sales pages, launches, website copy, and email marketing. And the topic of today is going to be email segmentation. I know it's not super sexy as, you know, creating killer copy, but we're going to talk about copy, I'm sure. But email segmentation is super, super important. And if you don't know what it is, I'm going to let Melissa explain what it is throughout this conversation. So how are you doing today, Melissa?
Great. Thank you so much for having me. I've been really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm stoked for this. You were talking right before we hit record that it's like, it's not the sexiest topic, you know?
Yeah.
But it's super important, especially as your online business starts to grow. Because I didn't do any email segmentation for a long time. And then I started getting a lot more opt-ins. I started getting opt-ins from different places and having different lead magnets, you know, and there's all these different stuff and different entry points where people are at and like the stages of where they're at. So I really had to learn more about email segmentation. But can you tell the audience real quick, just what is email segmentation and why is it important?
Yeah, email segmentation, basically what it is when you have an email list of subscribers, you're grouping them in different groups based on characteristics. And the characteristics can be a bunch of different things, like how much they're clicking your emails, how much they're engaging with your emails, like opening them, for example. But what I always recommend is segmenting them by where they are in business or what type of business they have, for example, and not going too crazy about it because you're going to create a lot of work for yourself if you give people too many options when they click that link in that email.
Right. Keeping like a natural flow with it. I think that's kind of an art form that comes with it. How did you get into this? What made you, well, I always love asking this. What made you decide, first of all, to be an entrepreneur? It's not the normal path, you know? So what made you decide to say, I'm going to be my own boss. I'm going to go for this. And then how did you get into teaching people about email segmentation?
Honestly, it was a quarter life crisis. I was 20, I want to say it was like 26, 27 at the time. I was a paralegal for 8 years and I had a good job. I had a good career. I was making good money for a paralegal and I had just played in a World Cup. So like, I knew I should be like very happy with everything I had because I had everything I needed, but like, I wasn't happy overall. Because I've always loved writing since I was a kid and I wanted to make a career out of it, but like, outside of publishing books every single year and them all being bestsellers, I didn't know that was possible. So I got a Facebook ad for copywriting and I watched the masterclass and invested into the course. And after a while, I was like, well, I think I could do this full time. Long story short, I ended up quitting my last job on my birthday. It wasn't the plan. That's just how it ended up happening.
Awesome.
But I didn't have any marketing experience or copywriting experience or any business experience before I dove into it. So my first year of business was super hectic because my retainer client at the time, they told me like, oh, we're going to, we have more work for you and it was going to replace my income. So I thought, okay, this is a good time to quit my job. A couple weeks later, don't hear from them. And it turns out the company closed. So
what?
I now have their income. Yeah, it was such a rough first month because I went from being so excited and then being like, oh, well, this sucks.
Yeah, I got a little too excited.
Yeah, I was so new to everything and like all the networking and stuff. So like, I definitely felt like I took the scenic route in business a bit. And I used to kind of see it as like almost like a weakness because I see so many people that do well, like the first year, for example, but they usually had a background in marketing or they niche down into their previous career field, for example. And I didn't do either of those things. So like, I'm glad where things are going now. But like, again, it just took me a little bit of time.
Yeah. Really interesting. So yeah. what advice, you know, just based on that and your experience, what advice would you give to someone who's thinking about, you know, starting in entrepreneurship or even maybe they're doing okay, but they're kind of thinking, should I leave my job or no? What kind of advice would you give them?
Try to prepare yourself as much as possible because I think we kind of look forward to the moment of the freedom. So yes, you do have this moment of freedom, like when you finally quit your job, but then pretty soon afterwards, you're like, oh, wait, I actually am doing this full time. Like, what do I do next? It's really overwhelming in the beginning, even though you are excited about everything, just because even though you started a business because you're very good at something, for example, and you really enjoy it, running a business is very different. And that comes with its own learning curves. And it takes some time to kind of get things where you want them to be, create your systems and everything. But if it's possible, try to save as much money as you can, cut down your expenses as much as possible, because it's surprising. Like, we spend a lot of money on things like we don't really need. Like, I cancel Netflix. I cancel all my subscriptions. I ate tuna and rice all the time. My favorite dinner. I try not to eat it anymore. But yeah, just try to be very mindful about your money, just because it is a very big transition. Always having a paycheck, even if maybe it wasn't as busy at work, for example, to not having that consistency. And the inconsistency is pretty hard to get used to.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And it's an art form to get to a point where you can have consistency, you know. Mm-hmm. It's also kind of, yeah, in my experience, it's like weird almost when you're, because you're working a lot in the beginning. And if you're building your business and then working a job on the side, it's like you're still in the mindset of what we're programmed to do, which is to like trade your time for money. And mm-hmm. we're thinking that I have to be constantly working to make income. But if you build like digital products, or, you know, are able to have two clients sign up in a month, and that makes you a full-time entrepreneur. If you can do that every month, maybe even one person that says yes to you, like, you realize mm-hmm. that you can actually do less work and fewer things and still make your money. Like, when I was making consistent passive income and started doing that, I still felt like I had to be working, even though I was tired. Cause like, it's like, oh, you're sick, who cares? You know, or like, I mean, if you're really sick, but like, oh, you're tired, like, go to work, drink some coffee. You know, you got to still show up and do your job. When you're an entrepreneur, like, you can make your own rules and you can be like, I don't want to work today, you know? And mm-hmm. I was kind of nervous. I'm like, if I don't work, then we don't make money. And then I'm like, wait a second, we're still going to make money. But I was still in that kind of mindset. So it's just, it's a weird little paradox we kind of deal with.
Yeah, definitely takes a little bit of time, because like, I absolutely agree with you. Like, we're so used to, like, we have to think in this thinking of, oh, we have to work 12 hours a day to make any type of money. And especially in the beginning, you put in a lot of work, but you're not going to see results from it for a while. Like, nothing's instantaneous. Like, I told my friends a couple of months ago, it's kind of like going to the gym every day and working hard, but like never taking progress pictures. So like, you think you're getting better and like, you think you're getting stronger, but like, you don't really have any way to measure it, because like, not all success and all accomplishments are measured by money. Sometimes it just takes you less time to finish a project, for example, or you did better on a sales call or something like that. And I think celebrating and recognizing those little moments of progress is really important, rather than always thinking, oh, I have to work another 12 hours, even if I don't feel good. Because I still struggle with that sometimes, because I feel like if I don't get everything off my to-do list, then I have to keep working, which doesn't make sense, because I can realistically push certain things off till tomorrow. Like, the world isn't going to end
right
if I don't do 20 things today.
Right. You're like, I got enough done today, it's okay. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it totally depends on who you learn from too. But I think it's good just to like, it's good to learn from people, because I've had coaches who are like, you got to work to the bone every day, you know? And I'm like, that sounds terrible. And then coaches are just like, chill, you know, it's all good, you got stuff. And then yeah, you kind of find what works for you. So I love that. I think that's really great advice. So let's talk about email segmentation. How do we go about email segmentation? You know, if someone has like zero in there, let's say theoretically that someone's getting traffic, whether it's through paid ads or social media, they're getting opt-ins onto their list, but they're not doing any sort of segmentation. How do we kind of go about this with email segmentation?
I think people think email segmentation is complicated, and it can be, but it doesn't have to be. I always suggest to people, try to do it as early as possible and don't have too many options, because the online world is so busy right now that it is hard to even get someone's attention in the first place, and you don't want to overwhelm them at first. But always deliver value in every single email that you send out. And when you send that segmentation email, it can be early on or somewhere in the middle of your welcome email sequence, for example. But just be honest with them and tell them like, hey, I want to make sure that you're receiving content that's relevant to you. And I want this to be like a long relationship, for example, because you never know where someone is in their life, because maybe they really want to work with you and maybe they're saving money to be able to do that. And they buy like your low ticket offer, for example. That doesn't mean they're never going to buy from you. They might not be ready, and that's okay. it can still be a sale at the end of the day, and just saying like, hey, can you just click an option below, and then that will let me know exactly where you are. Like you can have someone, if the first option can be like, I'm newer to business, it's been like a couple of years, I'm just getting my business off the ground, or I've been in business for a few years, but I want to learn how to increase my conversion rates, for example. And the third one, I think for mine, I'm a copywriter, and then I have a fourth one that says, I'm a copywriter, but also want to see the emails that you send to other people. Because like they're trying to learn and they're trying to grow. And it's cool to see like the little segments. It's a little bit different in ESPs. I'm switching ESPs right now, but once you set it up, you could just copy and paste those links into a new email sequence if you have multiple lead magnets, for example. So you're not recreating the wheel every single time, which is really
Yeah,
nice
huge.
because once that information is all in your system, it's really easy. Like if you realize like, oh, I don't think this group needs to hear this because this doesn't make sense to them, then don't send it to them because they're probably not going to open it and it's going to mess with your analytics. But it really keeps your list healthy because people are getting things that they want to hear. It builds your authority with them. They start to trust you more, and it just makes things so much smoother rather than trying to do this when you have like a list of 5,000 people, for example. It's going to take a lot more time.
Oh yeah. And then you're like, wait a second. Well, yeah, I like built up my list and then I started realizing about like tags. I use Kajabi for everything and it's not quite as sophisticated as some other tools, but like it works fine for me because I love simplicity. So it works for me. But like tagging people so you can email certain people who have a certain tag. Like we got people from this bundle that I did. So I tagged everybody who opted in, they were part of the bundle. So I know that people on my list are in that bundle, you know, and they're the right kind of people. So I can send emails just to them and stuff like that. And again, like, I don't know. I'm not like super savvy with email segmentation. So I'm curious if like my idea of segmentation is the same as yours. Cause when it starts getting, I just like seeing it as a very lean approach. Like I have multiple lead magnets. But they point to the same sequence because I want to bring people to this one product that's going to bring in. And I make sure all my lead magnets are relevant to that thing because I feel like when people, and I've seen people do this, they have this huge map. Like if someone does this and it goes over here and then it goes over here and they have all these products and stuff that don't even sell, first of all, and they're not as good and they don't bring in the revenue. And it's like the 80-20 rule of like, 20% of your products bring in 80% of the revenue. So I'm going to focus on those products. And be like, that's the one that I'm gonna be pushing instead of just trying to sell these other ones that don't actually sell, you know? So, like, trimming the fat and keeping things really simple. Cause, like, I wasted so much time trying to make things really complicated and it just left me with headaches and no money, you know?
Yeah, and I think we all end up doing that because we think like, oh, we can't look like we only sell one thing. Like I have to sell all these different
Totally.
things and like have all these different offers and stuff, and it doesn't work as well that way for the most part. Having one core offer, it can be like your high ticket offer, and having something in the middle, and then having a low ticket offer as an entry point and make sure they all complement each other is a really great strategy. Because if you have a bunch of different offers and none of them really go together, especially if you're trying to have a couple of different email sequences and you want them point them to each other, if they don't complement each other, then it's gonna, I feel like it feels more salesy and it feels pretty disjointed too. But if it's a natural progression of one product into the next one and their level of learning too, then like I think people really appreciate that too. But yeah, like it doesn't have to be super complicated. Like you don't have to have that, like I know exactly what you're talking about, like that big flow where
The
it's run
flow
like, okay, they
chart.
go here if they click this, and then they go here if they click this, and you really just need something pretty simple and then expand from there rather than trying to start really big and
Yeah,
seeing if it works.
it's like people just get lost in all the things that you can do, and then they forget the fact that like why are you driving traffic in the first place? It's 'cause you want to make a sale or book a phone call, you know, and lead this person down the right path to where you can help them ultimately by working with them. And it's like they just kind of go all these different places and never make the offer. Something I've learned is like the sooner you can actually make offers, depending on your funnel, the better. Because people, my mentors taught me this and I was like, oh, that totally makes sense. Because like I focus on like YouTube and then that brings people in because I offer lead magnets inside my channel and then they opt in and then it goes through email sequences. But like right when they opt in, it points straight to a masterclass where they can get a ton of value and then they find out about my program right away. Because some people are, they will watch my channel for like 6 months, 3 months, and they're like, I'm already sold on this guy. I like him. And then they finally opt in to watch the training, and then they're ready to buy right then. So why wait an extra 30 plus days? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So how do you, I guess let's kind of make this like a bit more tangible, because I'd love just to hear a time when you realized that you really had to focus on segmentation for you. And what did you do, and how did you kind of go about segmentation when you realized that you had this problem?
Well, I'm very much a to-do list type of person, and I like to try to have an action plan for everything as much as possible. And one of my goals for the year last year was to have some type of email list with like some type of lead magnet, because even though like that's what I was doing for my clients, I thought, well, I need to do this for myself too, but I wanted it to be organized from the beginning. So I spent some time creating a lead magnet that I felt my audience would really enjoy, that would be easy to give away on bundles, and then to promote like for summits and everything, and then create a strategic email sequence from there that had a little upsell to my digital product, but has a little upsell to in a one-on-one email or copy audit for your welcome sequence. So they all go together. And then after that, possibly working together, even though that's quite a big of an upsell. So the strategy for it, I think I didn't find it too difficult, because I mean, like writing copy, it is what I do for a living, but it is a lot of work, because you're not just creating the lead magnet. You're writing all the emails, and then you're designing everything, and then you have to automate everything into your ESP. But then you should look at everything occasionally and look at your analytics at least every quarter. Don't look at it every day, because it's gonna mess with you. But just making like little tweaks every once in a while. Like I remember I was looking at an email sequence, and I think it was the third or fourth email that I noticed that's where I was getting the most unsubscribes. And I felt like it was a good email, but then we're rereading it, and I thought like, oh, I don't quite like my tone here. So I just adjusted it a little bit, and then it just changed my unsubscribe rate like really quickly. So you don't have to recreate things all the time. So just, and you don't have to have a massive welcome email sequence either. It can be pretty simple. Welcome email sequences can range from just like 2 to 3 emails to something much, much longer. And I have my segmentation email, I think, on the 4th or 5th. I have a little bit further down, just because I love providing a lot of value for free whenever possible. So in every email sequence that I have, I try to point them into the direction of another resource that I have. And that's something that like I don't sell on my website, but I'm considering selling. I'm usually recycling things from speaking at other summits, for example. So it's a lot of tangible information that will be helpful for them. And it doesn't come with any type of expectation, except that I hope that it's helpful for them. And it's been really cool just to take a look at my analytics like every quarter or so, and realize like, oh, okay, this is actually doing really well. And just making little tweaks. It doesn't have to be anything major. If you can split test, that can be helpful too. I don't know if you can do that for Sequence 6, for example, but you can do that for campaigns and email blasts and all that. But don't overcomplicate things for yourself. But try to keep track of everything, whether that's a spreadsheet or a Google Doc, whatever makes sense to you. I use a spreadsheet to keep track of everything, because it's nice to see like the progression, like your list growing, but like your analytics like still being good. Just because I just like keeping things organized.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. Organization is massive, especially when it comes to emails, when you start getting a bigger list and whatnot. I'm curious, like so I'm building a new product myself, and I have one that's going. The one that's going is about like creating digital products and turning them into passive income. That's what the whole thing's about. It's really, I mean, even you can it teaches you how to like start from zero, like brand new idea, and then build your business. The other one is about, you know, like podcasting we shared about, and kind of my podcast like strategy and things like that. And, it's like, it leads more to conversations, what can get you in front of like bigger audiences and stuff like that, which can point traffic. So if I like have multiple different products, and then someone opts into my list, and I say, I don't know if there's a way that you can do this specifically in Kajabi, I'm trying to think, but it's like you send an email kind of like, hey, I want to make sure this content is most curated for you based on where you're at. If you click here to learn more about passive income and online courses, then you can go down this path. Or if you click here, you can learn more about like collaboration and that kind of stuff, or maybe even booking calls or something. So you have like two different entry points And is that kind of what you do with people, is like you set up that email to where it's like, if they choose this, they go this way. If they choose this, they go this way. And it's a more curated journey for them.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. And that's huge in email segmentation, because it doesn't, like, I'm working with a client right now that her emails is, it's very small. So we just created her lead magnet and she uses Flowdesk. So we're having the segmentation email and they're just going to be like branches with no twigs, if that makes sense. because we don't have enough data yet to know like exactly like which option in the segmentation email is the most popular or which one needs more content, for example. So like as she grows, we're going to add more there, but we have that option in the beginning just so we don't have to do everything from the beginning once her list becomes massive, because that's a really great way to do it. Because like if you know someone that's interested in passive products, start pointing them in that direction, because it's especially once you grow and you have multiple products, but like not all of them are in the same category, mm-hmm. but some of them do complement each other,
right?
Then you can still target people with those specific products because they're already interested in them. And if you have an email that maybe it's about a slightly different topic that pertains to a different set of products and they show an interest in that, then you can start sending emails to them about those products as well. Because if you have 10 products and say three of them fit in one category, three others fit in another category, then it's kind of overwhelming for people and you don't want to give them too many options, because at the end of the day, you are the expert and you should know, you know more than them probably what is probably better for them in their current situation. Because if you overwhelm people, they're just gonna be like, well, I don't know. They all sound good, but like, right. I don't know which one I need. And then it results in a lot of confusion. Confusion's bad for conversions.
Yeah, I love that. Confusion's bad for conversions.
It can definitely be done. Just look at your analytics, see what people are most interested in. And another thing that I'm really big on is surveying and just attaching really simple surveys to products. If it's a course, for example, having a short survey, it's like it's just had to see like where they're at right now. I'm just asking them like, what are you currently struggling with? What are your goals after completing this course, for example? What are you looking for? And then have another survey after they've completed the course and they probably had some time to implement everything. So you have like almost like a real time before and after of where they came from. And in the after survey, you can ask a little bit more deeper questions like, how has this transformed your life, like what goals did you accomplish, all that stuff. So number one, you probably have a great testimonial, but then also because it's automated into your email sequence, you don't have to, once it's set up, you don't really have to do anything, just check back in on it. And sometimes people have really good points and might say like, oh well, the second module I felt was a little bit confusing, I wasn't quite clear on this lesson, for example. But because we're so close to our offer, it's probably really clear to us. And different people have different learning styles. So having those little pieces of information so you can adjust and improve is really big, because it's not a lot of effort to do that. But you can get some really, really good information from it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I love the fact you brought that up. Just about listening to your audience, especially when you're building mm-hmm. a product, because as most people know, the completion rate of courses is anywhere from 3 to 15%. And 15 is like high for most people, but a lot of people, like, they don't build really good courses, you know. And it's knowing what your audience wants. If they like short, snappy kind of courses, then maybe that's better. It's the same amount of time in the course and amount of content. It's just that you've structured the lessons to be a lot shorter and like 5-minute videos instead of 20-minute videos, or maybe they like the longer videos, you know? And, yeah, you can learn a lot about creating a really great product. I'm always big on start small with a product and get people in the door, because you can always raise the price and you can build up the product. If they are in it and you have a good baseline that gets them the transformation that the product promises, then they can be like, oh, I'd really like to see more of this. I had someone in my program who was like, yeah, this course is great. I'd just like to see a bit more like SEO stuff. So I was like, oh, okay, I can do that. And I went through and added.
That's really good feedback.
Right. That's what I mean. And then you add it and then you keep getting feedback, pieces of feedback from people. And then it turns into this big product where you can charge like 5 times more for it. But now it's like, you know, it's going to work. And it's based on what real people really care about in your actual audience. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a really smart way to build your products. Can you tell me about a time when you have worked with a client and you like, you helped them clean up and their segmentation because it was just a mess? You went in, fixed it, and then what kind of results did they get? Can you share with me that?
Well, I do have a client that I just didn't have any type of segmentation done, and I didn't realize that until after we did his launch. So now we're currently working and trying to build his email list with the right people,
Oh,
because it's
big
one
mistake.
thing to have, you can have a list of 5,000 people, but if they don't really know who you are, and if you never reach out to them, as soon as they get an email from you, they're like, "Who is Melissa?" Like, I have no idea who this is. And like when they unsubscribe, they're gonna say, "I never signed up for the email." Because
Right.
they just don't remember you, and it's so important to have the right type of people on your list, because if you can have the best course, you can have the best offer with really great results because it's already been tested and that's already been proven. But if your messaging is off, or if you're not selling to the right audience, it's going to fail. And it's really hard not to take that personally, because we put so much time and so much effort into our offers, into our products, but a lot of the times it's not because your offer is bad, and it's not because you're not good at what you do. But if you have a list of people that just don't care to hear from you, or they don't need your offer in the first place, there's no reason for them to buy. So with this client, I was just talking to him about how most of his list is either past clients, or their colleagues or people that he's met through networking. So they're not the best fit. So I actually talked to him and I told him, like, you should try bundles, because the parenting niche is really, really big. And for some reason, there aren't a lot of men like parenting coaches in that group. And like a lot of women in that group, they're actively looking for more men to add to their bundles, just because they just wanted it to be a little
Diversify
bit
a
more
little,
equal.
yeah.
Yeah. And he was really excited about it, because like he had never heard of bundles before. And then within like 10 minutes, I found one that he could apply to that was like exactly what he was looking for, because he works with burnt out parents who have kids that are usually either like very stubborn, or they're being very withdrawn, and they're just trying to like reconnect with their child again. And he has great testimonials from people. Like one of the research calls that I had with one of his past clients, she told me, like, honestly, I would have lost my spark in parenting, like if I never worked with him, which was huge. So like the messaging was good, but he didn't have enough of the right people in his email list. But now that we're working on that strategy, like he's really excited about it. Just because,
Yeah.
like, again, you can have a really great offer and really great testimonials, but that doesn't mean anything if you're selling it to the wrong people. So
Yeah.
building a great lead magnet from the very beginning that's talking to your ideal audience is super key, because then by the time you are ready to sell something to them, they're like, "Well, I don't need this. I'm just going to leave." And it can be really discouraging, but it doesn't mean you're a failure. It doesn't mean that your product is a fail. Like sometimes you just have to adjust and try again, which is very true to business, I feel.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I love that you mentioned that, 'cause like I told you before we hit record that, I built my productivity course and I sold that, and I spent time building a list of productivity interested people. And then I, like, a while later created my passive income course and I tried to sell it and I didn't make any money. And I was like, "What the heck? I did all the research, I did everything, but I had pitched it to an audience that didn't care." And then it took time to build up a new audience of the right people and kind of part ways with other people that were on the list that weren't interested in that stuff. And then I was able to start, selling it because I had the right people on the list. So having the right kind of audience is huge. So I'm really glad you brought that up.
Yeah, I almost think it's harder than creating a quality product, because like if you've been an expert in the industry, say for like 3, 4, 5 years, you already know a lot that can be really helpful to somebody. But it can take a long time to build a solid list of the right people.
Oh yeah, it's strategy and you got to be smart with it, and like bundles are great. That one, I was just on one recently and that was the first one I've been on, but yeah, it was awesome. Got a lot of cool people from it and yeah, led to some business, which is great. So Melissa, based on your career thus far as an entrepreneur, what's something you wish someone would have told you early on?
Oh, that's a great question. I think you know more than you think you do, and you don't have to know it all to try to get anywhere, and that it's okay to not have a background in what you do, because you can still become successful. Because I don't have a background in marketing or copywriting or anything, so it definitely took me a while to get some traction. But now that I've been doing it for a while, like I feel like I've been doing it forever. Like
Right.
the experience will come, and like just because you don't hit six figures in your first year, for example, that doesn't mean you're that's never going to happen, or like that's not possible. Like it's the journey is different for everybody. And you can't compare yourself too much to other people who are probably in a very different position than you were.
Totally. Yeah, it's easy to do that, but I think comparison is good. It's actually, I think Adam Grant posted this on Instagram. He has some cool stuff, but he said that comparison isn't the problem, it's envy. It's saying, why isn't that me? And you know, I should be the one who's having the success, but comparison is fine. It's just like, you know, I see Melissa, and if you're doing something rad that I think is cool, I'm comparing myself to you, but I'm being inspired by you, really. I'm not being envious of like, oh, she's making more money than me or whatever. And that's where you start getting bitter. But having comparison is good. It's what helps us build up. I do CrossFit and we have our whole leaderboard with people in the gym. And I have friends in the space or in, you know, throughout the day they go to different classes or whatever, but I'm trying to beat them, you know? And it's because it's fun and they're trying to beat my score and they see it and they're like, oh, I got me. So we're like, we're comparing, but it's fun. So that's great advice. I really appreciate that. Melissa, we're going to come in here for a landing. Where can people learn more about you and get connected?
On my website, it's meomarketinggroup.com. I'm also on Instagram. My handle is at meo marketing group. But I love hearing from people. So like if anybody has an email about like copy, business, whatever, I'll definitely respond back.
Awesome. Right on. We'll put some links down in the description for the listener. We talked a bit about email segmentation. There's obviously so much you can really cover with it. And I would definitely, if you're like interested of like my email list is growing and I don't know how to handle it, nothing's really happening, conversions aren't working, then definitely reach out to Melissa because she can dive in there, do a better analysis of what's actually going on with you and help you solve that problem. Okay. Bottom line is, I mean, keep it simple. I think that that's kind of a common thread that we were talking about because me and Melissa, we both seen people we've talked to and worked with, and they just had these crazy flow charts and all these crazy offers. And it's like, keep it simple. 80-20, this is a product that really sells well. Focus on that one, you know, and then you can focus on building another product and make sure that people have a good, nice journey and you're getting the right kind of curated content. That's where email segmentation can really come in. Okay, obviously there's a lot more to cover, but we only have a little bit of time. So if you are curious about more, definitely get in touch with Melissa. Bottom line is do something though, all in all. Take what you learned here, get out there, make something happen, and we will see you in the next one.